Welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast. For episode number 93, we are joined once again by Chris Schwenker, physical therapist and author of the recent article, 55,000 Miles Going Nowhere, Confessions of an Unapologetic Zwift Indoor Specialist. Oh yeah. If you've been with us for a while, you'll recall that Chris joined us originally in 2021 on episode number 44. After I saw his article published in Cycling Weekly, I invited Chris to come back to the show to catch up and tell us all about what he has learned riding 55,000 miles on Zwift. Okay, this episode turned into a bit of a sales pitch for Zwift, but since I'm a big fan, I'm not apologizing for that. We touch on what's good and how to solve the few things that are hard about riding indoors. Chris also shares his expert tips as a physical therapist and a very experienced indoor rider on how to be strong and pain-free on the bike wherever you ride. If you ride on Zwift, I hope this gives you a few tips to make the experience even better. If you haven't ridden on Zwift, then listen in for the many reasons to consider it. Riding on Zwift is a great adjunct to being strong on your bike anywhere, but Zwift has many attributes which are better than quote-unquote real riding. Zwift isn't perfect, but it has changed my life for the better. Alright, let's talk to Chris Schwenker, the nicest guy on the internet and the only person I know who has ridden his bike across the United States and 55,000 miles going nowhere. Chris Schwenker, welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Well, I really appreciate it, gentlemen. It's an honor to be back. I'm really looking forward to catching up with you both.
All right, very good. Good to have you on board, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, fantastic. Chris, it's been, gosh, I can't even remember exactly, but I think it's been like 2 years since you were on the show. I've been following you ever since, and you're quite the prolific writer, and you're now getting published, I see, in cycling magazines and things like that. Congratulations.
I really appreciate it. It's been a really fun ride, to tell you the truth. I am. The last time we spoke, I was just, I guess, on the tail end of my physical therapy practice. My goal was always to retire when I turned 50. Unfortunately, my father passed away in his very early 50s, and it kind of opened my eyes to what was really important in life. So when when I got my first paycheck, I went straight down to a financial advisor and told him that I was going to retire at 50. And things, you know, I've been very blessed with employees that have really made me look good, and a great, you know, great support from them. They become like my family. So yeah, I was able to on the my 50th birthday, I retired, semi-retired. I still have my foot in the door. I do a little bit of consulting at the office, but I took it as an opportunity to challenge myself. So I have kind of gone in a couple of different directions, all focused on my passion, which is riding a bike and being as healthy as I possibly can.
Well, fantastic. Fantastic. And I'm hoping that you haven't forgotten everything you learned about being a physical therapist, because whether it's coming from your expertise helping clients or perhaps friends or just yourself, some of the issues that we'll talk about today are the physical issues that may arise from riding indoors, which are different. Even though many are the same, some are different from the issues that people encounter riding outdoors.
I agree. And you know, I'll never not be a physical therapist. That's part of my identity.
Fantastic. You know,
healing people through exercise is my life's work. So I'll never stop doing that.
Well, good. Well, so you are the I don't know what to call you, the king poobah of indoor riding. I mean, you have done so much. What is it? In your article, it said 55,000 miles going nowhere. I think that's awesome. You know, as a physical therapist and as a guy who is totally sold on indoor riding, I thought you'd be the perfect guy to talk to about this question of, at a high level, what are the differences, good and bad, between indoor and outdoor riding? And then for the things that maybe are bad or harder about indoor riding, what can we do about it? But before we get into all of that stuff, I would love to hear you tell us a little bit about this article that I saw that you wrote that was published in Cycling Weekly in February of this year that had that in the title, 55,000 Miles Going Nowhere, Confessions of an Unapologetic Zwift Indoor Specialist. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so I had done a good number of articles. I think we published like 20 articles last year. And the editor at Cycling Weekly, Anne-Marie Rook, who is the North American editor, she said, "Chris, there aren't too many people like you that are ride exclusively indoors." And I said, "Well, there's really a lot more than you would know." And she says, "Well, why would that be?" I said, "Well, there are plenty of reasons, and there are plenty of reasons why there are thousands of people that are just like me that are doing it." She said, "No, that can't be." So I wrote the article, and I knew that it had to be an article that made it very clear that I've been around the block on my bicycle outdoors.
Sure.
Right. I've taken my bike. I've ridden all over the country. I've ridden to the top of Pikes Peak. I've ridden to the top of Mount Washington 5 times. I rode my bike over the Golden Gate Bridge. I rode my bike to the top of the Tioga Pass from Yosemite Valley. I've ridden it all over. And last summer, I spent 2 months riding it from Half Moon Bay, California, back to my house here on Long Island, New York. Wow. I've ridden my bike on the road. I know what it's like. And I've also raced my bike on the road prolifically for a very long time up and down the East Coast. I'm very much an amateur. I came from a very shallow and stagnant gene pool. So I didn't really get very far, but I was always very competitive and I raced hard, and it was something that I really loved doing. But it became one of these things where I was spending a decent amount of time in the hospital. Get dust ups, right? I'm battling with cars every day. I became a real weather weenie because as I got more and more competitive, my body weight went down and my ability to handle cold and wet and miserable weather became less and less and less. And I also, as I was building my practice and had a young family, I was found myself always having to train very early in the morning. So that was either going out in Long Island is very cold and damp and windy in the winter. And in the dark, it was just miserable and extremely, extremely dangerous. And the way my schedule was to get to, to be able to take care of my family and get to my practice, I had to be out and back before they knew I was gone. So that always meant riding really early in the morning, and it was a lot of time on the trainer, and I had a compu trainer back then, and I thought that was the greatest thing. I thought it was like, what could possibly be better than this? I have a screen, and then the resistance is going up and down. It's so great. But when I found Zwift, it just blew my mind for so many different reasons.
Oh yeah. And smart trainers are really good these days.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
For a number of different, like the real road feel of them is, if you didn't try it, then you really wouldn't know how much it resembles riding on the road. It really does.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. My experience is a sort of a light version of your own. So it really resonates with me. One of the reasons that I wanted to do this episode is for the people who are like us, who do mostly or entirely do their cycling indoors. And that is not to say that cycling outdoors is not awesome. As long as I am not crashing or getting run over by a car, then riding outdoors is one of the great things in life. Zooming down a hill on my bicycle is one of the more exhilarating experiences that I've ever had, and I miss it. But what can we say? Glenn, what do you got to say?
Yeah, Chris, it's funny because I have the exact same experience myself. I came from the same realm as you, as bike race or, all that kind of stuff. But, I had like four or five different trainers that just sat idle all winter long. And I'd ride in the cold, I'd ride in the wet, I'd ride in the snow. And then I found out about Zwift. And I rode so many miles. I rode more miles in that winter time on Zwift than I'd ridden all the years I've been bike racing over 40 years. It was a lot of fun. And I got to the point where it was like I could go outside or I could ride the trainer, and I'd ride the trainer because it was just hop the trainer and I'm gone. It was done. I have to get in my bike, put my clothes on, deal with the weather, deal with the cars, the traffic. And now that I'm out here in South Korea, I don't ride the roads at all because you can't ride the roads here. But the bike trails are awesome. I can go for hundreds of miles on bike trails and never see a car the whole time. So, but I'm still riding his whip, though.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned the article. So the way that I explained the benefits of Zwift in the article was the six C's. So I'll list them out here. So climate, basically, it's always 61 degrees with 50% humidity in my game cave, right? It's always like that. I can control it. It's always the same. There's no headwind. There's never an issue like that. Convenience, you know, I can jump onto my bike whenever I want for as long as I have available. And if I wanted to, I could get into a race at any time of day. That would be plenty competitive for me. Or you know, ride alongside 200 or 300 people that were all going the same place I was. Mm-hmm. Comfort, and when I say comfort, I mainly mean safety.
Yeah,
you know, not having to deal with cars and potholes and rabid dogs and things like that.
Oh, broken right? bottles, right? I mean,
yeah, or getting broken bottles thrown at you, which does happen. Cost. Which is probably a controversial one for some, but after the initial startup costs for Zwift, like you already have a bike, most people already have a bike. So once you buy the trainer, right, and the whatever device you're going to use, whether it's an Apple TV or a laptop or an iPad, you know, once you make that commitment, then you're pretty much done. When I was racing bikes, I was getting a new wheel set every year, mm-hmm. right? I would you know, so my wheel set would be $3,000 or $4,000 a year, right? I had to have whatever was the next cutting edge, lightest possible thing I could buy. You know? And I was spending so much money. In addition to the fact that, you know, race fees are not cheap. When you come from Long Island and you're traveling up to Vermont for the Green Mountain Stage Race, and you have to spend $2,000 for a condo with the family, right? And you're hauling them up there, right? It's you know, it ends up. And then the emergency room copays. So yeah. By the time you're done with all of that, you're way, way, way over the expenditure of a trainer and an Apple TV,
yeah.
right? The competition, you know, say what you want about Zwift Racing. Zwift Racing at the level that I'm at, which is the community level,
yeah.
There certainly is cheating that goes on.
Sure.
It's much less than it was in the past. Zwift, in the infancy of Zwift didn't really acknowledge racing. They didn't really think that was something that they wanted to embrace. You know, it was more of a fitness platform. It was more of a just people want to get on there and just ride beginners, right? But the racing community really took hold, and you gentlemen know as well as I do that. Who are the most passionate cyclists you know? Are they the guys that do the, you know, the 15 mile an hour coffee ride, or are they the racers?
Racers, right?
The oh yeah. They're, so, you know, they became a very passionate community on Zwift, but also the most vocal, because racers are also the most vocal, right? Mm-hmm. They don't, if things don't go their way, then they make it known, right? There are like a lot of type A hard driving personalities, right? But of all of those things, those first five C's that I mentioned to you, that's what got me to Zwift. But the reason why I Zwift every day now and will continue to Zwift every day, and I might not even get on my bike at all this summer, who knows, is because of the community. It's because of the friends that I've developed on Zwift. It's because of all of the things that I've done on Zwift. I belong to a team called DIRT, which is Dad's Inside Riding Trainers. And it started off as a bunch of fathers that were always riding at the same time. And then they would talk about their kids and you know, how they were, you know, they were like me. They had to train before they had families.
Yeah.
So that whole philosophy and that belief system grew to, we have 12,000 members on our team now, which we estimate, we always gloat that it's the largest cycling organization in the world. Which it could conceivably be. I don't have any idea, you know, I don't have any data to back this up, right?
It's big.
But 12,000 people is a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of unity there. There's a lot of support there. I've gone as far as to have created a charity to support members of my cycling team and virtual cyclists in general. It's called the Dirt Dad Fund. Mm-hmm. And we've donated almost $20,000 to members of the virtual cycling community in need. In fact, just last week, I did a fundraiser for the 4-year-old daughter of one of our members. She has a very, very rare disease, genetic disease, and she needed an adaptive cycle. And I raised $6,000 in less than 24 hours to get Lucy a bike.
All right.
And that was all due to the power of the virtual cycling community. I'll tell you another story too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Last month, when you get onto Zwift, there's chatting going on.
Oh yeah.
You get into group rides, it's all the same people. Now, when you start racing, you have your team that you're racing with. It's not 12,000 of us. We have a team, and then so you kind of develop there's little subfamilies within these virtual groups that you belong to.
Sure.
Well, myself and I think it was 17 other guys last month rented a house in Georgia, and we all got together, just having known each other from Zwift. We had never met in real life. We went down and spent 4 days riding around the Blue Ridge Mountains. We did the Six Gap ride down in Georgia and just had a good time getting to know each other on a personal level. And this was all having never met each other in real life before.
Wow.
All just relationships and it was as if we were college roommates.
That's great. That resonates with my experience. Glenn, what about you? Does that make sense?
Just a quick question. Are you chatting on Discord or on Zwift? Is there a channel on Zwift now?
Zwift doesn't have its own chat functionality.
So using Discord.
There are other platforms
that do. You mean that there's no voice chat, but you can type chat?
Right, you can type. Right, exactly. You can text chat, I guess you would say, or type. Yeah. No, it would be over Discord.
Okay. Yeah, we're using Discord because we were doing racing here in Colorado when I was in Colorado, and we basically could. The nice thing about that is that guys you race with in the real world, you'd race with in the Zwift world, you knew their style of racing and it applied to Zwift too. It's like when they go up the front, I'm not going to last. Sure enough, you'd reel in later. So it was kind of fun because, it was the opposite of what you just did, where we've been racing for years and now we get Zwift to race because it was during the COVID thing. We couldn't race anyway. So it was a great way to race and stuff. So I put a lot of races on in Colorado, a big series and things like that. So on Zwift, that was fun.
Well, it's interesting because one of the criticisms when I wrote that article, like with that article on Cycling Weekly, they always post it to their Facebook feed, right? So people can comment.
Sure.
It got 500 comments. They had to close it down and then open it back up again. Huh. And one of the major things was, it's not real cycling. It's not real racing. I know it's not real cycling. It's not real racing. But for you to say that there's actually strategy involved and that what you are in real life is what you are on Zwift kind of makes you think about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So humans evolved to ride a bicycle out on the road. They did not evolve to ride a bicycle on their computer. What's real? I don't know what the word real actually means.
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. And I would argue that I think it's great that it's not the same as regular cycling because it's not meant to be, and the races aren't meant to be. Mm-hmm. It's a unique discipline, and they have their own world championships, and this year they're going. Well, actually, the next iteration of the Olympics is going to have a Zwift event.
Yeah, well, and I guess I'd say that if it was open to me, I would do both. I would do outdoor riding with people when I could, like on a weekend day. When the weather was good and I wasn't going to get frostbite, but I would then ride indoors when it fit my schedule better, early morning before work. And it's too dark. I'm not going to go out and ride in the dark outside and get run over and things like that. So, but still at this point, indoor cycling, and I think particularly on Zwift, even though there's lots of other platforms, Zwift is the one with the most people on it and the most things to do. It's rich enough that it's a thing all by itself. You could just do that for your cycling and get satisfaction from that. And so that's what I am right now, even though I do still have some hope of doing some more gravel riding where I'm not going to get run over. Right now I'm just doing Zwift. So I wonder, Chris and Glenn, let's just kind of step through this indoor cycling thing. Maybe it's to some extent, maybe we're making a case for it, although I think Chris has already done that. But mostly what I'm interested in is understanding some of the issues that people who are riding indoors more, whether they're new to cycling altogether or they've been riding their bike for a long time outdoors and now they're riding their bike indoors and they're finding that they're having, you know, pain in their body, that kind of a thing, where that somebody like you, Glenn, with your experience, but particularly you, Chris, with your 55,000 miles of Zwift experience, what could these people do to ward off or resolve these issues, whether it's a discomfort in their saddle or discomfort with the temperature while they're riding their bike, or, you know, those kinds of things? What do you guys think?
Well, I would say that the primary thing is that you want your outdoor setup to be resemble your indoor setup as closely as possible, right? Yeah. The bike fit is, you know, you gentlemen, of course, you know, the bike fit is essential, right? That's the one of the most essential. The interface between you and your machine is what makes it all go around, right? If you're not biomechanically or posturally correct, then you're going to get repetitive use injuries. That's a fact of life for cyclists. The pedal stroke is so repetitive that if we're not doing it the right way, then it causes inflammation due to overuse. So that would be the first thing that I would say.
Yeah, so bike fit. Get a good bike fit, and the bike fit that's good for you outdoors is pretty close or maybe the same as the bike fit that's good for you indoors. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say that it should be as close as possible. Like a lot of people, like they devote a one bike to indoors and one bike to outdoors. And a lot of times it's problematic because they're both not fit the same. So, you know, that's that would be the first thing that I would say. And then, okay, you know, when you're riding indoors, you don't have to adhere to physics in a lot of ways, right? So you don't have to be aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Your saddle doesn't have to be the tiniest little saddle, because who cares what it weighs, right? So you could, you know, raise your stem, sit a little bit more upright. You could get a saddle that's a little bit more forgiving, and you could you don't have to sacrifice anything for comfort indoors. Whereas you would outdoors, right? You wouldn't want to be upright. You wouldn't want to be holding a big brook saddle up a hill, right? So indoors. So, you know, there are things, there are benefits to riding indoors as far as comfort goes.
Yeah.
But all the same rules apply. You want to wear a really good pair of, you know, cycling shorts. You want to wear your good stuff indoors. Most people, you know, they don't wear their good stuff indoors, because why would they? No one sees them, right? But it's even more important to do that. And then the fans, I know you had mentioned about that article. I did post a picture of my indoor riding space, and I have three fans it's like a wind turbine in my gym, because that's what, you know, you sweat a tremendous amount. There's not a lot of air movement, and without that, you know, the sweating causes irritation. You know, you leave yourself prone for saddle sores and things like that. Keeping the humidity down is really important, not only for those issues, but also for performance. I have an air purifier in my gym, which is a big issue that people don't really think about, because when you're in the basement, there's particulate matter down there. Your burner is down there. A lot of people's laundry facilities are down there. There's a lot of air pollutants that you aren't aware that you're inhaling in a confined space. So I have a pretty high powered air purifier down there also, which is really, really important. And then there are technological things that you can utilize to your advantage. Like I have a smart bike and it goes up and down. So you're varying your position because the front of the bike goes up and down with as the terrain goes up and down.
Oh, I see. It's sort of like the kicker.
Exactly. So it's built in. Yeah, so you it changes your angle, so it's almost like you're going up and down hills, and your angle your would change. And like I know that that you gentlemen are you're probably real powerhouses on the gym, and you can sit in the saddle and grind away. So there's a lot of pressure there for a prolonged period of time. And when you're indoors, you don't have to stop and put your foot down for a traffic light. You're not making turns, so you're not like varying the pressure on your, you know, on your saddle region that way. So you have to kind of almost consciously get in and out of the saddle. You know, some people even like set a timer. You know, they have Siri tell them every 15 minutes to get out of the saddle.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, my rule for this purpose is that when it goes uphill on Zwift, I stand up. and I ride out of the saddle for a little while. And that's just how I make sure that I'm moving on the saddle a little bit. Because otherwise, and I don't think that it's, I'm not sure what it is, but when I ride outside, I'm moving on the saddle a lot, whether it's putting my foot down at a stop sign or at a red light, or I don't know what it is. But when I'm inside, if I don't have rules to get me to move, I don't. I'm just, and so the pressure is on the same spot for hour after hour. And I can remember when I first started doing it, it was agony. And, you know, and I would try all the different, you know, things to make it less stable, you know, like the rockers and things like that. And it all helped a little bit, but mostly I just had to get used to it. And it took a long time, and I had to instill these rules like you're describing.
Right.
Chris, do you have one of those, like a rocker type system that rocks or goes back and forth?
I don't. I guess as a physical therapist, I'm pretty in tune to my body. So I've always been able to adapt to different positions just by listening to the cues that, that my body's been giving me. So I never really felt like I needed a rocker plate. And I also am, I've gotten a lot better, but I'm also very performance driven. And I felt that the rocker plate kind of, what's the best way to say this? That not all the power is going into the pedals when you're using a rocker plate.
Oh, interesting. Well, I have heard that the power you generate indoors in general is lower than the power you generate outdoors. Did you find that?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people do say that. But I think it's just like, it's just like sprinting indoors is a unique activity to sprinting outdoors. There's no bike throw.
It's
more of an up and down rather than side to side. So I generate more power indoors just because I know the technique.
So it's a skill. You just have to learn it.
Just like anything else. Absolutely. The best sprinters indoors aren't necessarily the best sprinters outdoors. So, me just cranking away in the saddle, I probably can do more outdoors, but when it comes to dynamic efforts, 5 seconds, 15 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, I'm much stronger indoors. Also, because when you're maxing out like that, when you're outdoors, you're not only just thinking about putting all the power to the pedals, you're also thinking about not skidding down the road, right? or having somebody, having someone door you, right? When you're indoors, you can close your eyes and let it all hang out.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point. When you're sprinting in a real race, you're trying to go as hard as you can and trying desperately not to crash.
Yes.
Because you will certainly crash if you're not super careful.
And some of the guys around you have less of a threshold for that than you do.
I hear you. Okay, well, so what else? I guess things that I have encountered as I did more indoor cycling at first were things like saddle pain was one thing that, I never had any trouble out on the road, and was always sort of amazed at the people who talked about how much pain they were in with their saddle, and they've tried everything. And I was like, wow, really? The saddle I got with my bike, that's all the one I've ever used. So it was like, I was so mystified by it. But then I started riding indoors and it was agony. So, but we talked about that already. Let's see, neck pain, I think, is less indoors because I think people, as you said, they're not that worried about being aerodynamic. So they sit up more. So there's less of a, your neck.
There is an interesting point about neck pain.
And
that actually comes up a lot when people see that picture of my indoor cycling space.
Okay.
You'll notice that the monitor that I use for Zwift is actually very low. It's almost like on the ground. Because when you're indoors, when you're riding outdoors, your gaze isn't off at the horizon. Your gaze is at the wheel in front of you or the road that's right in front of you. So you're actually looking down. So if you take the monitor that you use for Zwift and put it at shoulder height, then you will have neck issues because you're hyperextending. And that becomes problematic. So when you set up your Zwift setup, you want to have that monitor below the horizon. Like you almost want to, before you take out the screw gun and screw that mount to the wall. Have somebody see you looking normally, like naturally down as if you were riding outdoors, mm-hmm. and have that monitor set at that level.
Smart. Okay. Well, so what else? Back pain. Have you heard of people who get back pain from riding indoors?
You know, the back pain is a very common cycling injury, and it stands to reason, right? When you're cycling for long periods of time, you're at in a flexed posture, your hips don't really have the opportunity to open up. So cyclists get into this syndrome where their hip flexors are really tight, their glutes are really weak. And that goes the same for their, a lot of cyclists don't like to do core work. So, all they want to do is ride their bikes, and they don't really take the time to do the other things, which are really essential. So the back pain is definitely because of the posture. So bike fit is really important. If you have those issues, you can decrease your reach so that you're not as flexed. And then, off the bike, activities like core training and strengthening your posterior chain and really focusing on the glutes and activating the glutes is really important for cyclists.
Interesting. Any thoughts on best ways to do that? Like doing single leg Bulgarian split squat type things or anything else?
Well, actually, I probably have 20 articles on my website that are just different ways to train your glutes. But I'll give you my routine for a morning of riding, right? Before I go down to ride, even this morning, I did an endurance ride. Nothing hard. I wasn't doing any efforts, but I always do a muscle activation routine before I get on the bike. And I did a video of it. It's on my website. You can go check it out. Great. But it's all, muscle activation is not meant to be a strengthening activity. All it is meant to prime the neurons. Like your brain is giving signals to your muscles, and you're gonna give them a little bit of a boost.
Just so, remind your brain that you have that muscle.
Right, and it's more of a it's more of a zen activity, right? You're really trying to make these connections. And I focus on my glutes. I do fire hydrants. So on all fours, quadruped position, I do fire hydrants. I do donkey kicks. I do hip extensions. I do alternating arm and leg, so you're really engaging your spinal extensor muscles,
like a bird dog type thing.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. So that you're really engaging those posterior muscles, those hip muscles, and then I get onto the bike and I make sure that I kind of ease into it from there. But what I'm thinking in my mind is that my glutes need to be firing at peak efficiency for me to be able to get through this and perform well, and also decrease the amount of injury that I have. And then I always stretch out afterwards. Uh-huh. And the stretching is really focused on the hip flexors, the psoas, the quadratus, the muscles on the anterior portion of your hips and thighs.
The front side.
Those are the ones that are constantly in a flexed position. Mm-hmm. And they get they get really tight because of that.
Okay.
I know that a lot of people when you speak about stretching, a lot of people kind of say, "Oh, I don't need stretching." But I'm a proponent of stretching. That's a lot of what we do in the physical therapy profession. Before you don't want to necessarily stretch before you're going to perform a ride, but afterwards, I'm a strong believer in that.
Cool. Yeah. And it always feels good to me. I've heard both sides of that, whether it's really good for you or not good for you. But if it feels good, I mean, that's good. That's a good enough reason.
I like that.
So I think one of the issues with riding indoors that, we've talked a little bit about and hinted about, and maybe we just hit it again, because I think it's really important, is this business of you just aren't moving as much. And one of the consequences of that, if you have a much narrower range of positions that you use, not because you have to, but you're not forced to not do that. And so if you're not thinking of it, you might not, is that you are not spreading the load over as many muscles as you might have if you were moving around more, changing your position more, sliding a little forward, sliding a little back, sitting up a little more, getting a little more aero, those kinds of things. And so I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Because, you know, what will happen is if you're using fewer muscles is that they get tired faster. And maybe this is where some of this back pain comes from or other issues that people have. What do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of that has to do with what you do off the bike. You know, in addition to all the riding that I do, like I rode like over 350 miles this week. I also spent 3 days in the gym, doing core strengthening, doing leg strengthening, upper body as well. But it's, you know, you have to condition those tendons, you have to condition those ligaments, you have to build up the muscle there. In addition to the fact that the weight-bearing exercise is really important for bone mineral density, and cyclists have a big problem with that, especially indoor cyclists when you're doing a lot of sweating. It's really not great for the strength of our bones. So,
right.
You know, the time that you spend in the gym is really essential to being able to ride. I don't know if you know Phil Cavell, but he wrote a book recently, The Middle-Aged Cyclist, I believe it was called. And he described it really well when he said that cyclists are great at riding, but once they step off of their bike, the wheels come off. And basically meaning that you can ride your bike all day, but if your wife asks you to carry the groceries up the stairs, you can't make it. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, doing that preparation and putting in that work is really important to get through what you want to get through when you're on the bike. Yeah. And my experience isn't necessarily like yours. I'm a lighter rider. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that I do on Zwift now, it's a lot of competitive stuff. I don't race a lot, but I race twice a week. And that's
sounds like a lot.
Yeah. But you know, compared to the, you know, it's a small percentage of the miles that I actually put in when I'm on Zwift.
Okay.
But you know how it is. A lot of the group rides end up being races anyway. So a lot of the efforts that I'm doing are more explosive efforts, and on Zwift very much so. It's not like when you do a road race, you know, there'll be a selection, there'll be a hill climb, it'll be short bursts of power, but it won't be repetitive over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Now on Zwift, most of the races are points races, so you could be sprinting, max sprinting 12 times in the course of a 1 hour race.
Okay.
And KOM competitions and the majority of the efforts are less than 1 minute.
Yeah.
So with a smaller guy with like me, I need to be out of the saddle to be able to do that. So I'm up and down a lot and I'm changing positions all over. So yeah, I don't really have those same experiences to speak of, but I can tell you that any of the things that I do, I would not be able to do unless I put the time in at the gym that I do.
Well, that's interesting. And I have the same kind of experience related to the gym, in that when I was riding and racing outdoors a lot, I didn't want to go to the gym. I wanted no upper body mass. I didn't want to carry that weight around with me. That didn't do me any good on the bike. And so I didn't do any of that kind of thing. And that is not good for my longevity as a strong, healthy person. So nowadays I would say I even put a little extra emphasis on the gym because I'm trying to catch up for some lost time and doing upper body work and lower body work. And yeah, that interferes with my ability to go hard on the bike. So that means I can't do as much of that as I want to. But, you know, because I'm controlling, you know, I'm not sort of beholden to when the races are scheduled for or, you know, when the team rides are scheduled for, I get to do it the way I want to. There's always something going on Zwift. I mean, you jump into some ride that's happening in Asia, you know, at 2 a.m, right, Glenn? And, you know, it's whenever you have time. So I totally think that that this is another advantage of the indoor cycling, is it can kind of get your mind straight as to what are your goals here? Are you doing this because you want to become a professional cyclist? Okay, that's different from me. I'm not hoping to become a professional cyclist. I'm trying to be a healthy person. I want to live a long time and be strong and healthy for a long time. And to do that, I have to have room in my life for more than just riding my bike.
Well, it's interesting that you say goals, because I think that is a big point here, because there are some people that ride Zwift and their goal is not to be the best Zwift rider they can be. Their goal is to be the best outdoor rider they can be. And Zwift is just a tool in order to do that. So I'm not telling those people that they should do what I do. That's certainly not the case. You know, they should tailor what they do indoors so that they have the best outdoor experience. You know, they're not going to become great bike handlers by riding and racing their bikes indoors.
Right.
It's going to get worse, right? I can tell you that when I go outside for the first time after riding indoors for 3 months, I'm squirrely. I'm a little bit anxious about it. Trust me, I don't want to be around other people. I'm not naive to that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's also one of the things that traditional cyclists fear about Zwift's the hordes of Zwift masses that yeah. don't have any balance stimuli right. are going to get yeah. onto the roads and force them into ditches and things.
Yeah, come spring, which is, all of the Zwift power people who have no skills show up and
exactly,
it's chaos.
And they're going to ruin it for everybody,
yeah.
Which is certainly not realistic because I hopped on the bike and rode 4,000 miles across the country and I didn't have a bobble. It's so, you know, that's a big, huge thing, the goal setting. But when you say that you're not going to be a pro, keep watch this space, because before you know it, there are going to be pro esports, pro cycling esports riders that make a living wage racing their bikes indoors.
Yeah, I'll just have to.
You heard it here first.
I'll have to wait for the, the 90 plus age group pro esports.
You don't have to wait that long. In fact, just last week, I don't know if you've ever heard of the virtual cycling platform MyWish.
No.
Okay, so MyWish is a competitor to Zwift. In my opinion, I would say that it's actually the closest competitor to Zwift.
Huh.
It's a platform that was created in the UAE, backed by people there. They just had a race series with $1 million prize pool.
Whoa.
And they had a master's category, Joe. So
oh.
you could have walked away with a hefty purse if you won that race.
Yeah. Well, so the truth of the matter is that I've been racing as an older masters, not in the last couple of years, but there's some really strong guys out there. And,
oh, absolutely.
And so the only way I'm going to be walking away with some good money is if I live longer than they do. And then that's why I was saying 90 plus. I've got some good genes. Maybe I could outlast some of the guys who are better athletes than me.
Yeah, I always joke with my wife that my prospects for winning a race, go up as I get older.
That's pretty funny. All right. Well, good. So what else? Hand numbness, foot numbness. I'll tell you that one of the problems that I've had, I don't have a temperature controlled place for where my indoor setup is. I'm in my garage, and in the wintertime, it's cold. Now, that's no big deal, actually. I mean, I generate enough. My body is inefficient enough. I generate plenty of heat once I get going, but that does not get to my toes. And so I was really struggling this last winter, more than I remember, in having frozen toes while I was riding. And so I had to dig into my memory banks. And for skiing, I would always use, that iron, whatever that is, where, you'd put the little patches, you'd peel off the wrapper and you'd stick it to your foot or your sock and you put it in your boot and it would combine with oxygen in the air and it would heat up for a couple of hours. And so I was having to do that every morning. What do you guys do for that? Although Chris, maybe you don't have this problem because it's temperature controlled for you.
Yeah, I don't have that problem. But when I rode outdoors, I certainly did. That was a huge thing. From all the stupid days of going out and doing a century in the 15 degree weather, your extremities get numb and frozen, and it makes it easier for it to happen over and over and over, and then you kind of lose the ability to actually heat them up. So no, I was a huge proponent of those toasty toes that you're talking about. I used to sandwich my toes in them, and they worked really great.
You'd put them on the top and the bottom, huh?
Oh, you bet. And I would stick them in my bibs. I would be like walking around like you could barely even see me because I was just like cloaked in them. But those are really great. But I don't have that that experience indoors. But there's just like I mentioned earlier, you don't have to worry about weight or anything. You can put on booties or do whatever. And if you, it's not like your buddies are going to leave you at the cafe. You can jump off the bike and take them off when you don't need them anymore, and then just jump back on.
That's true. Yeah, and one of the problems that Zwift has always had, and I understand today, or maybe yesterday, they came out with a new feature, but the problem was always that once you were in a ride, you couldn't stop. If you stopped to go to the bathroom or something, it would be just like real life, except that you couldn't say to everybody, hey, everybody, let's take a pee break. If you pulled over to run to the bathroom, the group is gone and you're never going to catch them. But they now have a feature called a coffee break or something like that, where you can ignite it and you get 3 minutes to go grab a cup of tea or go to the bathroom, and you can come back and your avatar has been riding with the pack all along. And then you turn it off and you're still with the group.
Yeah, so that's not live yet. In fact, I was actually on a ride yesterday with one of the devs, and he was just trying it out to try to debug it. But it's coming soon, and that'll be a much needed feature. A lot of people have been asking for that for a really long time. You can't use it in races, obviously. It's like one of those quality of life enhancements that it won't really impact too many people, but it'll be really nice to have.
It is funny, I'll say, because everybody who thinks that indoor cycling is stupid has stopped listening to this at this point. I would say that there are some things with indoor cycling and a Zwift type of a platform that is better than outdoor riding. And this is one of those things where, they've now added that or are about to add this thing, but also the ability to talk with your friends using maybe an app like Discord or typing, texting, / chatting through Zwift. It's much more social to ride indoors than outdoors, where you're constantly, desperately making sure that you have enough oxygen so that you don't pass out and fall over while you're riding.
I'll take it one step further. The racing indoors is more cohesive. It's more tactical. It's more strategic. It's more team oriented,
and includes fewer visits to the hospital. Yeah,
yeah. But I'm just saying that it's with Discord, with the ability to strategize on the fly with every single person on your team, whether they're off the back or not. It's far superior to anything that I ever experienced when I was racing on the road with all different levels of teams.
Oh yeah.
Throughout my career racing. Never had the enjoyment or the ability to, first of all, strategize about a race, over Discord for days leading up to it, and then actually having it, be fleshed out on the fly as you're actually involved. It's like being like having a team radio.
Yeah, it's like being a pro, and you've got the team director in your ear talking everybody through it. Yeah, I've had that experience with some team time trialing. And just trying to figure out who's got something left and who, taking turns and who's going to take a short one. And okay, I can't take another turn. But you got to be able to hang, or otherwise you don't get enough people to cross the finish line to qualify for a finishing time. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I totally agree.
Yeah. The time trying actually that's has become wildly popular on Zwift. And I think it's all because of the all around the community and the team aspect of it. It's like one of the most popular racing events on Zwift, because people of all different levels can get onto a team, and they feel like they're part of something. They're contributing to a greater cause. It's really, I would have never, like, I'm not because I'm a lighter guy. I was a climber, and Long Island it's really windy, and it would just when I was racing, I was in the 120s. I was very, very light. But I was, doing the Green Mountain Stage Race. I was doing the Killington Mountain Stage Race. I was doing a whole bunch of hill climb time trials and things. So when I got into a crosswind or a headwind here, I was just, it was miserable.
Yeah.
Right. But, so time trials really wasn't my thing. I never just dreaded them. And I was like, this is never going to take off. But I think in the last, they get like 2,000 teams in each race.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, it's totally fun. It's awesome. Okay, so we're going to run out of time here soon, and I wanted to talk about one more thing, Chris. And And this would be the thing that is the most obvious, but we haven't spoken about it yet. And this is the whole gamification. So the only thing that even comes close is like a Strava type of a thing where, you know, it's keeping track of what you're doing. And there's, you know, and if you belong to a club on Strava, it can accumulate like miles or altitude and you can kind of get ranked. And so there's a tiny little bit of that for outdoor in the real life type people. But for Zwift, for online, gamification is where it all started. So what do you have to say about that, Chris?
So I think that, you know, the definition of gamification is something that we want to clarify.
Yeah,
first of all, the graphics in Zwift are not meant to be like video graphics. Like, it's like when you look at the screen, it's not meant to be like what you would see if you looked out your window, right? It's,
yeah. And there are other ones that are better at that, but I think Zwift has decided to not try to make it like lifelike.
No, they consciously have kind of tried to hybridize the game, the video game and the cycling, right? Yeah. So, you know, when most people think of gamification, they speak about like the power-ups that are available that boost your power or make you lighter or make you descend faster. Those are like type of things like you would have in like Mario Kart, where you would click on something and it would give you a special power. So that's what most people think when they talk about Zwift. And there's an aero power up that makes you more aerodynamic for 15 seconds that you want to use when you're coming up on a sprint or during a selection point. There's a feather power up that decreases your weight, so you want to use that when you're going uphill. There's one that makes you a more efficient drafter.
Yeah.
There's one that makes you more effective over varied terrain. There's an anvil power up that makes you heavier for descending.
Huh.
And it's the optimal use of these things is what people, you know, that are racing and utilizing Zwift consider gamification.
Well, and I would add to that there's this other thing, which is like video games, where you collect points by participating in things, and then you can use points for buying things that make you faster, make you better, make you or look different.
Right, those are called drops, and you can buy things with your drops. That's the in-game currency.
Right.
So like when you're a site like me, I have all the stuff that I would need, right? In addition to there's the Tron challenge. Do you have your Tron bike, Joe?
Oh yeah, that took a long time to get.
Yeah.
But it was, first of all, I was really pissed that I didn't set that as my first challenge. I wasted
everybody
all the time
makes that
before.
Mistake.
But then I just did nothing but climbing for a while. It was the Alpe de Zwift over and over again to try to get that bike up. But it turns out that I don't even use it. I like being able to tell when I'm in a draft. And when your avatar does not set up when you're in a draft and when you're using the Tron bike. So I just get, you know, I bought I use the wheels that are proper for, you know, like in real life, I would use the right wheels and then I use the right frame. But I then get to see whether I'm in a draft or not.
Well, I'm glad that all the people that aren't proponents of Zwift have already stopped listening, because I'm going to blow your mind with this next comment.
Okay.
Because this is where we're going down the rabbit hole here. No, I have no idea when I'm in the draft or not. I say what you're explaining is that on Zwift, with the number one view, you're actually looking at yourself, right? And
yes,
then when you're in the draft, so you're looking at yourself riding.
Yes.
So when you're in the draft, your avatar sits up as if it's sitting up in the draft. And then when you're not in the draft, it's kind of like you're on the rivet. You're down in an aerodynamic position trying to get back on.
Right.
See, I use view three, which is the first person view.
So you're not more like out on the real world. You're not looking at yourself. You're just looking at the guy in front of you.
Right. And the reason why I do that is because I'm a more efficient drafter when I do that. I know exactly when I'm on the way. I know exactly where I need to be and when.
Okay.
So they see, I'm one of these guys that prides himself when I'm in a race and I do well, I want to have the lowest watts per kilo of anybody in the top 10.
That's smart.
And it's all due to experience and, you know, knowing when to go and knowing when not to go and also being an efficient drafter.
Yeah. The last thing you want to say in a race that you lost is, but I put out the most power. Like, that is, what are you going after here? No, you want to have won and not put out the highest power.
Oh, yeah, that's just like, tell me that you don't know how to race a bike without actually telling me.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so, and I will say that when I first started doing Zwift, getting these drops that I could use to buy things, that mattered a lot because the stuff you got mattered a lot. And over time, now I've got like 20 million drops. You probably have way more than that. And there's just nothing I want to buy anymore. So it loses its appeal. Now, upgrading, that is very important. I find meaning in that. And so that, but of course, that only, I'm at 60, you know, just like you are. And so I can't get any higher. And so I've sort of lost that. But, you know, whenever they up it, you know, it was like 25 for a long time. And then it went to 50. And then it went to 60. And so whenever they do that, it's very exciting for a while. Because I know that every minute I'm out there, it's the clock is ticking. And I'm going to get an upgrade. And then I'm going to get a, you know, and then I'm going to be able to get those cool glasses that you only get when you're level this. And now I'm proudly wearing my level 60 jersey.
That's really cool. Yeah, the whole leveling up is a lot of people are very motivated by that. And a lot of people are motivated by getting the badges, all the different route badges. See, that's not really my thing. I have no idea. Like, I guess I wear the jersey, whatever the team is, and I just leave that on. Yeah. Sometimes I change the equipment. I'm not really big on that, but I have no idea what route. I only tried to get one route badge in my whole Zwift career.
Wow.
And that was the Everesting badge.
Okay. Well, yeah, you got to have that if you're going to get the Tron bike.
Yeah. Well, I got the Tron bike a million years before I Everested, but I'm talking about like Everesting in one ride.
So what does that badge mean? You did 26,000 feet in one ride?
Exactly.
Tell me how you do that. How many hours is that?
It took me 12 hours when I did it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's up and down the Alpe d'Huez 8 times.
Wow.
And you get a badge for virtual Everesting. That's the only one I've ever cared about getting.
And the president of Zwift comes to your house and shakes your hand?
Oh no, a million people do it. Especially with the pandemic, people were doing it like twice a day. You can't read. It's not a big thing anymore. It really isn't. And the people that do it really well, they do it in 7 hours, 8 hours. It's crazy.
Wow. I had heard of the Zwifting thing, but I didn't realize there was a badge for that. I just thought that was something that...
Well, now you know. You're going to have to get it.
Oh, no.
Wear your best bibs, Joe.
Yeah, wear my good bibs. Oh, my God. I'm not doing that, 12. No, I'm not doing that.
Well, the advantage is that when you're going downhill, you can get off the bike because it's super tucks. You can go into the bathroom, you can change and then get back on the bike. You don't have to even waste any time.
It's actually quite a good break when you are coming back off of doing Alpe d'Huez, which I never quit before that because that's free points, free
absolutely
drops, free everything going down that hill. So, you know, even
just
if
like
I don't
outdoors,
have
right?
Exactly.
You would never do a climb outdoors without having you only go up to go down, like a lot of people do anyway, right?
That's right. That's right. Well, Chris, this has been totally fun. We've run out of time, but I wanted to get two things from you here. One was there anything else that you wanted to share? And then the last is tell us a little bit about how people can find you, communique, and anything else that you want to point them to.
Well, the only thing I could say is that it's really truly an honor to speak about this. I realize that I'm in the minority when it comes to my passion for indoor cycling. But the only thing I want to tell people, and like one of the comments to that article was, "This guy's a real nincompoop." And seriously, that was one of them. And I the only thing I can say to someone, like, people say what they say, they have the right to say it. But I can guarantee you that that person never tried Zwift, right? So that would be my advice. Give it a shot. You know, if you still don't feel that way, then certainly I'm a nincompoop and you have every right to say it. But you don't have the right to say it unless you've given it a try. Secondly, there's such a vibrant community there. And that's the one thing that I wanted to get across. The charity that I created, the Dirt Dad Fund, really does a lot of work. And you can find that does a lot of really good work for a lot of people, just like any other charity does. And cycling related charities are really special because the cycling community, whether it be indoors or outdoors, is a really tight knit community. It's very, very supportive of each other. It's kind of like that fraternity that we're in, it's like a really cool card to have, because it's not easy to be a cyclist, right? It takes a lot of hard work, and a lot of times it's really not that fun, and it's miserable. But everybody's like, in misery together, and there's something really special about that. Right. So, yeah. You can go onto my website, which is the Zamunique. It's like communique, like you would get, at a big race after, when you find out who got disqualified for peeing in the woods. It's, the Zamunique, communique with a Z.com. And awesome. You can find the Dirt Dad Fund there, and you can find the articles that I've written, and, you can look up the work that I've done for Cycling Weekly and Cycling News and Road.cc and Bicycling and Swift Insider and Endurance Biz. I'm really proud of all of that.
Well, fantastic. I'm proud of you too. And Chris, I'm going to get links to this stuff here in the show notes so people can find that and not have to worry about how to spell it. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
Honored,
it's been
truly.
A pleasure, Chris. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Glenn, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Chris Schwenker. You can find more information about Chris, his article, and his newsletter, The Zamunique, in the show notes.